Okay, who are you and what are you doing here?
I'm Daryl Funk with Funk Cycles. And let's see, we started, I guess, in 1989. So here we are. What is it? 2017. How many years is that?
It's a long time.
That's too long.
All right.
No, it's not too long. I love it.
So I'm not a Funk Bikes expert.
Yeah.
I knew the name, and I've known that you've been around for a while. What got you into the game back then, or what led up to that?
I've always had kind of a dual thing in life with motorcycles and bikes. And back then, we didn't have mountain bikes. So when they started coming in, I really wanted to play in that arena. So
I got involved,
made a bike, sent it out to Mountain Bike Action magazine. And
what bike did you?
It was an elevated chainstay.
Like, it was steel or aluminum?
Aluminum. Which wasn't so common back then.
Right, yeah. So, Elevate Chainstay aluminum mountain bike, it was a rigid fork.
We sent that out, yeah. Everything was rigid.
Probably before a ground control fork or whatever it was.
No, it was just a... I don't even know what kind of fork it was. Oh, it was a Gary Fisher fork.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So you just said... What were you doing before that? Like, you just suddenly make this thing? You got to have some skills.
Yeah, no. There weren't too many builders. Not as many builders as are now.
But what were you doing like prior to just throwing this bike together? Like, were you in the like custom motorcycle industry, or were you in motorcycle racing?
I was messing around with the university. I taught for a while, and then I just said, "But this is what I love to do."
So you just okay.
And so we just.
You were an academic though.
Ah, boy. Can you call me an academic? That's pretty weird. But no, so. I just thought there could be a lot of things that could come together between bikes and motorcycles, and actually that's pretty much happened.
Okay.
So I had like 17 motorcycles before I got out of college.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, so somehow, and then I had worked in a lot of bike shops, and somehow it came together.
Okay, and, so you throw this bike together and you say, well, damn it, this is my first bike. I might as well get the big hot magazine to review
so
it because it's so baller.
And I called them and they would not tell me a thing. And then Rob Riesinger, he basically called me up and he said, hey, dude, maybe you want to get an ad. And I'm like, well, yeah, maybe. But he goes, well, your bike's on the cover of the magazine.
Dude, so you just hit a home run first at bat.
It was pretty cool. It was this Southern California guy all crossed up and... Yeah. And the bike's in the air.
I think NBA around that time, that was pretty SoCal.
Yeah, man.
What is it? High torque, you know?
High torque publications. There you go.
Okay, so you get the cover of the magazine on your first bicycle.
Yeah.
Okay, you just totally won. Now what?
Then that was fun. So then that launched me big time. So when
I
went to
Interbike. You built one bike, but you launched... Let's say you have 500 orders. Now what?
No, it was,
like,
and that's what happened. So I went to Interbike that year, and there were a couple European guys, because we kind of ruled back then, eh? The Americans ruled with mountain bikes.
Sure.
They didn't have them in Europe.
Sure, we had our one moment in the sun.
Yeah, so I went to the trade show, and there were some big guys in Europe, and they said, hey, we like your bike. I go, that's cool. And they said, yeah, so we start with 50. And that to me was a big number because...
You know what? If someone placed a 50 bike order here today, it'd rock someone's world.
Yeah. And then ultimately, no kidding, we got an order for as many bikes as we could send. And so... In a way, we got way bigger in Europe than we ever did in America because I didn't have any bikes left for America.
You know what? I'm really big in Japan. No, that's a joke, dude. Okay. So you got a 50 bike order. You're kind of new at this, and you're in that still in the primordial era of mountain bikes where it hasn't all been figured out at all. We're still trying different stuff. And what's happened? I mean, downhill was still kind of after the hill climb, you know?
Yeah. It was almost non-existent. But it was really fun. It just kind of grew up with the bike industry as bikes in the dirt. And so that's what we did.
What was your take on it when you made your bikes? See, I'm drawing a blank thinking about your bikes. Tell me about your bikes. What was your take? Why did you... What was different about your bikes early on, and what it kind of morphed into?
Yeah, so I think we were the only people doing aluminum were Klein and then a little bit Cannondale. So then we got into that space, which was not easy in the sense that heat treating 60-61 was a bitch.
If I could do it easy, I'd be making aluminum bikes. I build steel bikes, and it's like, I'd love to build aluminum bikes, but boy, that heat treating is a monster. What can you tell me about that?
I just lost a ton of money the first year, man.
Every single
bike I made, I would send to the heat treater, and it'd come back like a pretzel.
Right.
I'm not exaggerating. So, but it was a good space for us. We got it figured out, and enjoyed the heck out of it. So
what happened? I mean, you grew. It was during a rapid growth in the industry.
Yep.
You're big in Europe.
So, yeah. So then we jumped on the suspension fork era. That was, there were only three players, really. Well, maybe two. There was Doug Bradbury with Manitou. Remember that?
Yeah,
of course. And then there was Paul Turner.
I'm not a detail historian. I know what sort of happened.
So
I just don't know every little factoid out there.
We did a fork. This is a sensitive area. Should I even be talking about this?
But hell yeah.
We were hard anoing our stanchion tubes, and my plater said, well, you should try nickel plating. And I said, I don't know. And he goes, yeah, it's good. We did it, and unfortunately, it tended to anneal the stanchions. So I had a few hundred of those forks out there, and believe it or not, they were all annealed, and they all started to fail.
Dude, that's huge.
No, it was terrible. It was terrible. And none of us, maybe somebody did, but at that time, product liability insurance was like 50-something thousand a year for a small company like ours. I was going to pull the trigger on it, but I didn't. And so we had all these forks fail. And
you just had to pull them back?
Basically.
But no one got hurt.
No, but I couldn't afford it. Nobody got hurt because the forks just were soft. They just kind of... But it basically did us in. So...
Okay, we shut the doors.
And did anything happen after that with funk?
You know, I've got a colored history, but let's leave the story that far for now.
Okay.
What do you think?
I mean, that's fine with
but
me.
You know, when you're 62, 63 years old, man, I could go on chapter after chapter.
Well, that's what I'm here for. I want to hear the grisly details. not the drama. No, I don't want to hear the drama. I want to hear about, like, design and construction and, like, the difficulties or solutions you came up with for the working with the aluminum. That would be, I think, something a lot of people would really like to hear about, especially myself. If I could just simply heat treat effectively aluminum in my basement one at a time, I would be building aluminum bikes. Yeah. But that's a big hurdle for most of us.
Yeah.
And talk to me about that.
No. And the space was even much tougher then. Now we have 7005 tubing, right?
But I want to work with 6061. I want to work with real aluminum, right? So I don't want fake aluminum.
Yeah,
I want
real
aluminum. Like, how do I handle that? Like, or what did you learn through going through that?
So for us, the secret was in how we were quenching the tubing. And finally, because you heat the frames up to like 900 degrees Fahrenheit, soak them at that temperature for almost an hour. Then you have like just a few short, I think it's 30 some seconds to get it out of that and into a quench. And that's where all the magic happens. And finally it was the...
It locks everything in position.
Well, they wanna distort, so you do alignment after that. But depending on that, the content of the solution...
I mean, it locks the crystals in position.
Yeah. It's just an important part of the molecular structure.
Sure. So, okay. So you got to line them after.
Yeah, you line them up, and then you go to the next stage of heat treatment, which is just kind of a hardening, which is real simple.
Sure. Aging. You're just aging it in the oven.
Yeah, 300 degrees for like 8 hours.
But you were going to talk about the solution before I cut you off.
Yeah, the solution, like, so we were quenching them in just water, and that was terrible, but we started then doing it in a saline glycol solution. And believe it or not, when we did that, the bike stopped distorting when we put it in the water.
Distorting a lot or distorting at all?
They were distorting like crazy. Like I couldn't even use the bikes. And
right.
You know, it's so painful to like build a bike that took me like.
And the temperature change was the same. Everything was the same. Just you changed the content of the solution.
Yeah, it was the content of the solution.
Wow, that's wild. Yeah. Now, were you doing this in house or were you going to a heat treater?
No, because the equipment's pretty expensive.
Oh yeah, I've priced it out.
Yeah. So.
And what kind of batches were you doing to make it economical?
Six at a time, because that's the as many as would fit in the furnace.
You said 60?
Six.
Six.
Okay. Yeah.
And how much was it a run? Last time I priced it was $500 a run.
Yeah. So back then, it's about a fifth of that. It was about $100.
But that was
to do six
money.
Bikes. Yeah.
Because you know the bikes then sold for, actually we started out selling the bikes for. $456 a frame, and then my accountant said, you're not going to make any money. That's not enough. So we doubled the price of the frame, and our sales doubled.
Yeah, that was a different time.
And
just people wanted what was hot and what was the best and what was expensive, and you know, things are weird.
Yeah, but. I love it. And I think just staying at it, you can figure out anything. You just have to stay at it, huh?
So you didn't want to continue talking about after the forks and everything like that. But is there stuff you're doing now that you want to talk about?
No, I just think we've really had fun then with titanium. Titanium has been a good material. And I guess all I want to say is it's just really exciting to see what's happening in composites.
Uh-huh. You guys going to drift that way?
That will be a decision based on other people besides just me right now. So,
yeah,
there you go.
It's different stuff. Well, thank you so much for talking with me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, man. It's great.